Welcome to Your Right to Speak, discussions on social justice and advocacy. This is episode 22, and I'm your host, Salvatore. Jen, my co-host, is unfortunately unable to attend today. Jen, your voice will be missed. Hopefully, we can have you back on the next few episodes. Good luck with everything. On today's episode, we continue our conversation that we started, our last one, on mental health. And I am very pleased and happy to be talking with Paul, who I hear great things about. So I'm excited that I finally get to meet you. Paul is a professor here at Humber in the CYC and CYW program, I believe.
In the diploma program.
In the diploma
yes.
program.
Yeah.
Paul, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you for having me. So I have been in the field for just over 20 years now, and it's gone by extremely fast. But I just wanted to fill you in on my backstory and kind of in terms of how I ended up teaching and working in the field. So I come by way of Sarnia, Ontario, born and raised. And my schooling was in London, Ontario, so I attended Fanshawe College. I initially did a one-year certificate program, the Human Services, which I thought was a great way at the time to kind of get an idea of what the field was all about. So essentially kind of, you know, putting your tippy toe in the water to kind of see what it was all about. So I had two placements there, first and second semester, one in a grade school, one in a high school. And a lot of the classes were in regards to psychology, sociology, a lot of the counseling, the initial counseling piece. And following that, I applied into the Child and Youth Worker Program at Fanshawe College, which I started in 96, graduated in 99, and I had three fantastic placements, the first one being in a grade school, the second one was in a residential treatment center for adolescent males, and finally my final placement was in a drop-in center for youth who were living on the street, who were transient. So I learned a ton from there. And in my time in London, and funny, I've been chatting about this the last few weeks with students in terms of, you know, I get a lot of, how did you end up here in front of us and how did you end up teaching? What I always suggest to students is the importance of diversifying yourself in this field. When I first got into it, you know, in the mid 90s, my idea of being in this field was working in a school. That was kind of where it was at, or working in a group home per se. The field has come leaps and bounds, and I think that's come with my experience and agencies that I've gotten familiar with and so forth. But while in London, I made sure I did just that. I diversified myself, and I worked in open custody homes, closed custodies. I worked in a daycare center. I did some outreach, street outreach with the agency that I was at. I worked with adults in the mental health sector. So I made sure that I really, by the end of it, when I applied for jobs, had experience a little bit of everywhere, which has really afforded me the experience that I have now in terms of my work opportunities. Mind you, I've been more settled in my work for the last 15 years. I've been at the same employment, but again, it's that early hustle, the importance of really gaining experience and networking and finding out what your niche is and where you find, you know, fits your personal needs in terms of the work that you want to do.
Well, it sounds like you bring a whole amount of experience, so yeah. I'm excited for this.
Good.
I guess we're just going to dive into the questions.
Sure, absolutely.
The first one, I was wondering if you could define what mental health challenges are for the listeners.
Yeah, I mean, mental health challenges, I mean, it's interesting. There's not just, I don't think there's one label you can essentially give it. But I appreciate the word challenges and barriers because I think it's just that. I think oftentimes, you know, there's stigma and there's a lot of labels that we've seen in society. I do feel the last few years there's been a lot of discussion around mental health, particularly, you know, with youth and adolescents and using substances and putting, you know, and suicide and so forth. So I feel that there's more of a voice, which is great. I feel like the stigma of it is a little bit less than what it was. I do feel it's still prominent, most definitely. But I feel it's barriers and challenges in terms of moving forward. For some more extreme than others, I've seen kids that are quite, you know, could be quite psychotic and eventually clear. I've seen, you know, I've worked in different programs where, you know, individuals, it really impacts their capacity in terms of managing themselves, managing behavior, their thought process and so forth. You know, so it's, again, I don't think it's a one size fits all, right. So to speak. I think it impacts individuals in different spectrums and so forth. So I have had the pleasure of seeing students at one point, students or patients, sorry, I'll refer to them in many different ways, given my work experiences, but, you know, be actively psychotic and not well in terms of, you know, managing themselves and their emotions and so forth, and be able to see them in a place where they're able to make sound decisions and have clear conversations and be able to manage themselves if they're dealing with stress and anxiety. So I do feel it's just that, you know, that it is a challenge, it's a barrier. And I commend those individuals with it, because living with that is can be quite tremendous.
Right.
And again, having the opportunity to be a part of that in terms of offering supports and so forth, I think is an incredible opportunity. So.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair explanation of what it is. And I think it's very much in how we are going with the times, instead of using like mental health issues or problems. And I found that, you know, things like Bell Talk or mental health talk has helped.
Absolutely.
I was just curious, I know it's not on the list, but since we're talking about the definitions and I brought up the Bell Talk, you know, I often find with the Bell Talk, it started off as a good thing, but now it seems that it's just like the one, it puts one day on where we talk about these issues and then the rest of the year we kind of forget about it. Do you find that, or?
I think because I'm in the field, I see it and hear it more, but what I've seen is, like when you look at social media, for instance, and commercials and programming, I feel like there's been a significant change. Yes, it is one day, but I do feel that the promotion around it and the discussions that I've seen, like whether it's watching, you know, like a CBC, listening to CBC or watching a Canadian talk show or just in terms of like social media and different pieces that I find on my Facebook and so forth. I do feel the message is getting out and there's discussions to be had versus way back when, even when I was in school, like in college in the 90s, there wasn't as much discussion. Like, I mean, going into group homes and seeing kids, like I'm sure there was kids that would fit under certain criteria or definitions that we didn't know at the time or weren't using that particular language. Right. And there was, again, a lot of stigma at that particular time. So I do feel it is breaking down the stigma slowly, but surely, most definitely. Yeah. And I think the Bellette's talk, I think that's a phenomenal initiative. I love that piece is out there.
Yeah.
You know, and the whole piece connected to bullying and Pink Day and that sort of piece. I love that that exists for kids. You know what I mean? I have a lot of friends with younger kids who participate in these pieces around involving others and the whole idea of acceptance and so forth and tolerance. And that's all they're going to know, which is fantastic. So.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
So just moving on to the next question, and I guess kind of within what we've been talking about, have you noticed any gaps within the services offered to children and youth with mental health challenges? And if so, how can we address these issues?
I feel like the missing links and challenges. I mean, I work in a few different programs outside of the college, and one, for the most part, solo. So I have like 6 to 7 patients in a day program solo and, you know, work my tail off to really make sure that they've got their needs met and they're safe and moving forward in terms of their treatment piece. And oftentimes it's the numbers piece, it's staffing, you know what I mean? Because, and on the flip side, working in other hospitals, it's an inpatient setting where, you know, there's a lot of structure. There's a lot of supports that are in place and at both particular programs that I work at. And when they leave there, it's continuing that. Where do they go that they're going to be able to get that ongoing support? Not within that extreme delivery, so to speak, when they're in these programs, but what sorts of follow-up happens? So I know that there's a lot of cutbacks in working here at the college. Going out, you know, I do seminars, so I meet a lot of my placement students in schools, and you know, we hear about the cutbacks, and there's not a lot of child and youth counselors where there needs to be child and youth counselors. There's a ton of opportunity, I think, in terms of the family, right? And it's not, you know, I'm not pointing fingers by all means, but I think it's the dollars, really. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think there's a lot of work that's out there for individuals, like social workers and so forth. And you can only do so much, you know, but families coming in, getting some treatment, getting some suggestions, ideas, strategies. Okay, and then off they go. So where's the follow-up with that?
Right.
And how does that come into play? So I do feel there is a missing link, most definitely, but I do feel the work that's happening now is a lot more innovative. It's a lot more the idea of modifying and you know, having kids be in a regular mainstream school, so to speak. But I think that support needs to come with child and youth counselors, social workers, that piece. You know, I do feel it's missing in places where it should be, i.e. schools. There's not enough of them.
It sounds like what you're saying is that there needs to be kind of, if I'm understanding correctly, services kind of following the young person throughout their, like, life stages.
Absolutely.
And supporting, like, the young person.
Yeah. And even when they're in quote-unquote treatment, they're in this really intensive piece, and then where do they go? So in our program that I work at now, that's something we look at, is when they're transitioning out, what makes sense? What is it that they gained in terms of strategies in this particular program? How do they feel about moving forward? So going back to a regular mainstream school might not be the best bet. Do they need to go to another alternative setting where there's going to be supports, where there's smaller classes, where it fits their learning needs, their emotional needs, and so forth? So I wish there was more of those programs available.
Right.
But again, it's and in those programs, oftentimes it's like one CYC. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, and then,
and I know all about that. Yeah. But it's a ton of work. So I think it's, you know, it's the skill set as well.
Yeah.
So it's the dollars that need to happen. So
I just lost my train of thought. So yeah, I lost it. It's gone. it's gone. I was trying to get it back, but sorry, listeners.
It may return.
Hopefully. So with, you know, one of the gaps that I've heard of with the services is that they're not individualized enough for the young person.
Mm-hmm.
How do we achieve this individualized services in, I guess, three different perspectives, a frontline perspective, a policy and a program perspective? How can we get to that?
That's a really good question. I think, I think services that are offered, you know, given my experience, I feel sometimes it's the patient or student not following up, right? So you have this fantastic follow-up program where this is what it looks like, and they're just simply not coming to the meeting. So I think that's one component of it. But I do feel I've had the opportunity to work with some pretty phenomenal clinicians and physicians and psychiatrists and so forth that really hear the story of the individual coming in and making sure that they've got their, you know, needs met or supports in place. But I think sometimes it's the follow-up outside. Like, it's so hard to keep track of, okay, who's got the ball on this? Or the individual, are they able to follow up? Like, I've gone to appointments with students because I'm like, we are getting there and we're seeing this through. And that's the plan come spring for some of my students that are transitioning, to make sure that that doesn't get dropped. Because for some of them to go from there, they're on their own. You get parents that might be busy or single parent families that have already taken enough time. I know I'm going off track a little bit, but I think it's the follow-up piece. So I, you know, in terms of case management, or, you know what I mean, what that looks like, how is it convenient, how is it that we can get individuals through the door, and that follow-up piece. Obviously, there's onus on them in terms of accountability and following up, most definitely. But sometimes I wish there wasn't so many loopholes or steps, or, you know what I mean? Because I think they lose steam with some of that.
Yeah, for sure.
And then, going in and being able to advocate for yourself is key too. So I think, you know, I work with a few mental health court workers in my particular program who are phenomenal, because what they do, they come in with the student to my program for the intake. They keep contact, you know, what do you think of that program? Do you have any questions? And that piece is key to get them in my door versus, you know, other students that might come with parents, you know, with a lot of ambivalence and so forth, or just not want to attend. So that person that can essentially, you know, support students in that. And I know, you know, a few colleagues here, that's really their role. So supporting students or patients or individuals in court, or with schools or those meetings, attending those meetings, because there's a lot of issues and barriers that get in the way. It's easy to say this is where you need to be Tuesday at 1 o'clock, you know, but there's a lot that can happen from one day to the other. You know
what I mean? It sounds like a bit of a, like going back to the staffing issue, right? Because it sounds like if there's one CYC who is working with, let's say, 10 youth, you know, they, you know, the CYC has to make sure that there's that follow-up piece.
Absolutely.
But if there's, you know, it's a staffing issue. One CYC can only do so much, right? So I guess that would be, I mean, I guess that's kind of a theme of what you've been kind of saying is.
And I've seen more growth with it. Like, I know there's a program called Loft, for instance, that's connected with an agency that I work for. And they do a tremendous job at really connecting youth, like having it so that the youth are engaged on a social level and getting to know them in that sense, and having groups available and connecting them to whether it's housing, whether it's mental health, whether it's a medical piece. So I think they've done a phenomenal job with that. So I've definitely seen progression happen. Sometimes it's numbers in terms of, you know, students just not following through, but other times it's workload, right? You can only do so much as one person.
So there's only so much time in a day.
But I definitely feel it's moving forward with that. And again, I've seen some agencies do phenomenal work with that.
You know, so I had worked at the Advocates Office as a youth amplifier on a project called We Have Something to Say. And within that project, we had talked with youth with special needs as well as mental health challenges. And what had come up, or one of the themes that had come up, was that there's like these cookie cutter type of accommodations or services. You know, so speaking from like a learning disabilities perspective, you know, you get your IEPs in, you know, it's the same type of, you know, accommodations that the student next to you may get, right? Do you think that that is a policy or program issue? Do you think that policies or programs should be written to kind of accommodate more to the individual? Like, how do we get away from this cookie cutter type of thinking?
I feel with that, like, speaking on both ends, like we've had experiences in, because our you know, we usually have no more than 7-8 students in the program that I work at. So we're able to, you get to know the student. They might come with recommendations and whatnot. So clearly taking that into consideration, but also you get to know them as individuals. You get to know their strengths. You get to know kind of what works, what doesn't work. And you also get to challenge them appropriately within this safe setting for them. On the flip side, I've seen that where it's kind of this one size fits all. Like, if you've got ADHD, if you, you know, because I think there's more than that. It's more than just having ADHD. It's more than just having oppositional defiant disorder. I think that building that therapeutic alliance is key. You know what I mean? They need to trust you. You can have all these great tricks, this, that, and the other. But I think sometimes that link, that there's that missing link of getting to know the individual. You know, like, I've had students that quite surprise me, and I love it. I love when they surprise me. I love when they're able to follow through with something that I'm like, I'm not sure if they're going to handle this. And they do. And it's the best thing in the world, because I think sometimes we get stuck in that and not be able to move forward. You know what I mean? They might have this diagnosis per se. And I think sometimes, you know, we get individuals that worry, like, until we have a diagnosis. Okay, now they have a diagnosis. So it's like, well, okay, then what? But not letting that define them. You know what I mean? So I do agree with you. But again, on the flip side with that, it's the numbers piece, right? It's do you have the time to get to know these kids? Do you have the time to develop programs that make sense, that fits their individual needs? So there's a lot of different factors that come into play with that. But again, I feel, being in this field, there's a lot of individuals that are quite innovative, and you know, because I think at the end of the day, that's why we get into this work, because we want to see others succeed and move forward and do well. So you hope that that comes into play with our work, but I also understand when you've got a list of this to do and you've only got this amount of time. You know.
So you mentioned, and I thought it was a good segue to one of the other questions, was that, you know, the trust between like the worker and the young person. So often, you know, I hear, or I found that, you know, new CYCs that have just graduated, let's say, have a certain, I guess, let's say, stereotype of what mental health looks like. And they bring with those stereotypes, you know, how to work with the youth then. What advice would you give, I guess, new CYCs on how to kind of work this out?
I say this to my students all the time. I feel, don't miss the boat on getting to know the individual. It's a bit of a balance act because mm-hmm. they're going in and, you know, I think sometimes they get this feedback from their supervisors and so forth. You know, we talk so much about boundaries, the importance of boundaries. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes they're so wound up for boundaries and what they can share, what they can't share, this, that, and the other. I've been there too, like yeah. in the beginning of my career, really kind of figuring myself out in terms of what I could say and what could I talk about. I think that piece is key in terms of the boundary piece. Working within the agency expectation, most definitely, understanding what your students or clients or patients, what they're managing, kind of what's the reality for them within, you know, within reason, not right. so much at the beginning, you know, you don't want to label them and so forth, but just trying to get to know them as an individual, you know what I mean? Like I've had, in one of my programs, I get to know my kids quite well because some of them come for up to a year and I see them day to day. You know, other times when I work at another agency, I might have one shift with that particular patient. Mm-hmm. So in those 8 hours, I got to develop a therapeutic alliance, you know, and follow through with expectation. But I do feel the importance of empathy, the importance of being authentic, you know, and also being able to say, I don't know that answer. I'm not quite sure, but I'm going to find out. So working collaboratively with supports right. around you, you know, because particularly, you know, early on in this field, I think, you know, there's this whole idea of wanting, you know, you want to see others succeed or you want to take care of them or you feel bad for them, right? But you don't want to confuse sympathy with empathy, you know, because I think that gets in the way of your own stuff. And I think more importantly is being clear with who you are, understanding the importance of being in this field, and being able to keep the two apart in a sense, you know, with your own stuff. But it's difficult though. You get to know some of these kids really well and you become quite invested. So I know that's a very long answer for the question.
No, it's fine.
I don't think there's one way or another, but I feel professionalism is key. You know what I mean? You got to be professional. And also go with your gut. If you're being asked a question or if you're being asked something to do that you're like, not sure on that, ask others around you. I'm not too sure. I'm going to follow up on that. I'm going to let you know. But I think it's consistency, using empathy, professionalism. There's a few points there, but yeah.
It's very similar to what Catherine was saying in the last episode. I had asked Catherine, you know, should the label of like the mental health be separated from the young person?
Yeah. Yeah. And I did look at that question. I thought about that because I think it's important to, you know, look at the individual most definitely, but also be mindful. Like, I mean, I know that we talk so much about you don't want to label this, that, and the other, but you certainly want to know what you're dealing with, mm-hmm. you know, like you don't want to put yourself at risk or be vulnerable to a potential dangerous situation. So I think it's a mixed balance with that, you know, but on the flip side, I've seen others not give students or patients or students an opportunity because of this label. Oh, they might do this because of this, or they might do this. So I think it's a mixed bag, mixed balance in terms of knowing the individual, knowing the capacity, knowing what you're able to do, but also having the supports and being mindful of safety and what you can do mm-hmm. within the time that you have.
So balance is key.
Balance is key, yeah. And I wouldn't say day one start with this, but you know, it's establishing that relationship and understanding. You know, like I said, I've been quite surprised with some of the kids that I've been in contact with who come referred, and I speak with different clinicians and, you know, and I get a quote unquote report on them. And of course, I'm going to hear that and it's there. But also, you know, I always say to students, don't let this define who you are in terms of, you know, these labels next. I think that happens and it's perpetuated sometimes from some of the individuals that are quote unquote supporting them and so forth.
Right. And, you know, it's often, you know, once I found that a young person gets it labeled, they're kind of like stuck with it and they kind of internalize it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's difficult to, I mean, you know, I have a learning disability, and when I was given that label, you know, I kind of like internalized what does a learning disability look like, and I can't, you know, go on to get my master's because I have that disability. And it's very, I can definitely see youth internalizing that.
Absolutely. And sometimes it comes from the messages that they're getting from clinicians and being given, you can only do this is what you're going to amount to. you know, within reason, but I think it's around, I say to youth all the time, like, don't let this experience define who you're going to be for the rest of your life, because you're 16 years old, but also take some accountability. This is what life looks like right now.
Yeah.
What are some steps that you would like to do to change it? And
right.
is that something that you're willing to do at this point? You know, you got to give them hope, essentially. Mm-hmm. You're going to provide hope. But you keep them accountable. There's
right.
work that they need to do, most definitely.
We're almost near the end.
That was and quick.
I know. We have 5 minutes. And I want to get these last two questions in. Mm-hmm. And I had asked Catherine this question, and I thought it would be important to ask you as well.
Sure.
With all your years of experience in working within, you know, the mental health community, what is the one thing you've learned, and what is the one piece of advice you could give to, I guess, new CYCs?
I think the best advice is the importance of, as a new CYC, like, the importance of professionalism. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, it's, I say all the time, like, we're the product. Like, we go in, we're the ones giving the messages. They get to know us as a person.
Right.
We talk so much about boundaries, this, that, and the other, but the importance of professionalism, the importance of a specific interaction or an activity, or you might want to do something for students that you work with. How is this going to benefit them from a therapeutic level?
Mm-hmm.
So keeping that key, so the boundary piece is key.
Right.
But also the importance of being authentic and being yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Certain aspects play out. And I, what I've learned, is it what I've learned about myself or what I've learned?
What you've learned with your experience was the one important thing.
The important role that... we have, like, in terms of, like, I consider it, you know, such an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I always say to the students that I work with, to get to know them and hear their story. Like, I think that's a pretty cool deal. You know
yeah.
what I mean? When kids, they fill you in, they trust you, they talk about what's happened for them in the past, they talk about what they're wanting to do in the future. And I have a lot of value in that, and I think that piece is important. So I think the respect piece is key. You know what I mean? You've come in, like, this has been your history, but here's an opportunity, like, you know, in terms of moving forward and what that looks like. But I think the importance of giving them the opportunities, again, accountability is key, mm-hmm. most definitely. And I've seen students make some significant changes in the time that I've worked with them. And that's always the best
mm-hmm.
thing in the world. You know what I mean? To see someone really empower themselves, to see someone feel confident for the first
yeah.
time. You know, I've worked with kids for the first time, they're getting credits. They're getting credits and they're like, this is super cool. Like, you know what I mean? It's something that they have not had a lot of success in
mm-hmm.
school. They have not had a lot of success with experiences and that, and celebrating those successes and reminding them, you know what I mean? Like
mm-hmm.
you just got to keep moving forward and supporting them along the way. But the importance of being self-sufficient, the importance of moving forward and making decisions, most definitely.
When you say that, it reminds me of the movie Finding Nemo.
Yes.
And Dory often says, just keep swimming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true. And I mean, I learn from them as much, and I tell them that all the time. Like, I told my class today, we had our final class,
uh-huh.
and I've learned a ton from this particular
mm-hmm.
class. Like, you know, it's not just I'm coming in and I've got this agenda and I deliver this agenda. You get to know these individuals, you know what I mean? And it's, you hear their stories and it does impact you, you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? And it switches my thinking sometimes. And, you know, I'm not the same that I was 20 years ago when I first started in this field. And I won't be the same in 20 years from now, I don't think. But a lot more solid in terms of my delivery
mm-hmm.
and what it's all about, most definitely. But that comes over time. But I think it's, you know, it's such a gift, you know, to hear other
yeah.
people's stories and being part of their journey. You know, and oftentimes we're at the part that might be a bit murky.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
you don't sometimes get to see the tail end, but I think, you know, I have had students come back and to say, hey, like, remember that time you did this? Like, that was pretty
mm-hmm.
significant. Like, that's the best deal in the world, you know?
I think that's great advice and a great lesson learned.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask the very last question. And I ask every episode this, so
yeah.
the listeners are probably rolling their eyes as I'm going to ask this. But what does advocacy mean to you?
I think advocacy means the ability to really speak to your needs and speak
mm-hmm.
to your truth and speak to being able to utilize your voice in terms of what is it that you want, you know, and I think that piece is super important. Big part of our work. I'm consistently, you know, telling students you need to advocate for yourself. And sometimes like, what does that mean? What does that mean? I'm like, you need to go in and say, this is what I need when I'm in the class. This is what I need when I'm sitting in a treatment group. These are, you know, these are things that are going to help me and support me in terms of moving forward. And coming from an individual is fantastic, but as CYCs, I think that's a lot of what we do in our work. Mm-hmm. We're consistently advocating for others and wanting to see them move forward, wanting to see them have opportunity. And essentially find a place of peace, you know, for everything that's gone on for them.
So. I've never gotten that definition before, and I think it's great that you brought it. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
We're just about to wrap up. Would you like to say any last words before we end the conversation?
Yeah, this has been a fantastic experience. And I feel that half an hour has gone by very quick. I feel like it's been 3 minutes.
Yeah, I know.
And I hope I didn't talk too much.
No. Just the right amount.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity, though. It's been great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for taking the time out of your day to speak with me.
Absolutely.
Your right to speak will be posted on the second Wednesday of every month. Thank you again for speaking with me. If you are a child or youth that would like to be on the show, or if you have an idea of what topic we should be talking about, you can email me or Jen at yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. That's yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. Let's raise awareness together.